for the day, United States versus Salem. And my understanding is that the appellee will be arguing by speakerphone.
Actually not.
Oh, you're here.
Oh, good.
Well, that's very courageous of you. You came down from Wisconsin?
No, the problem was there was an accident, so I missed the train. Oh. I accident in an hour and 5 minutes to get downtown, which normally means 15 minutes. I just came by 4 minutes.
Okay. And, well, you're here in time. That's no harm, no foul.
That's pretty unbelievable.
All right, Ms. Quinn.
May it please the court, I'm attorney Kathleen Quinn here to argue on behalf of Anas Salem. Your Honors, this is a case where the government has correctly articulated on page 14 of its brief that this court should find an abuse of discretion by the district court in denying this motion for a new trial based on new evidence under Rule 33B, only when no reasonable person could agree with the district court's decision.
Ms. Quinn, I've got some jurisdictional concerns before you get to the merits of that.
Sure.
You filed a motion for new trial in the district court subsequent to the filing of notice of appeal, correct?
I believe that is correct.
And the motion for a new trial was denied.
That's right.
But no notice of appeal was filed subsequent to that.
Actually, the notice of appeal was filed, and then this court had directed that I obtain from the district court an indication whether or not they were inclined to grant the motion for a new trial. And I obtained that. That was in August. There was a very long delay in obtaining that. In part, we were waiting for a government's reply, and in part, we were waiting for transcripts to be made actually part of the record.
Well, I'm just concerned about whether we have jurisdiction over the issue that you want to argue because you have not appealed that issue.
It's set forth in the brief. I don't know that there is a separate notice of appeal articulating that.
I think there's a line of cases in the circuit that would require you to file a notice of appeal subsequent to the denial of the motion for new trial.
Okay, and I will need to look at the language on my notice of appeal. I don't know that it could have possibly included it because I believe that I only filed one.
You did, and it preceded the ruling on the motion for new trial.
It had to have by about 4 months. That's right. If the court finds that there is jurisdiction based on in the interest of justice or something like that, I would very much appreciate the opportunity to still argue this. I think that it's an extremely important issue, this disclosure of Brady materials or potential impeachment materials, especially given the way that many, many of the larger cases are being charged out up in the Eastern District of Wisconsin and probably in a lot of federal courts.
Ms. Quinn, you've heard Judge Titter's concern, but I think you can go ahead and touch the merits of your case if you want to.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for articulating it. This is a situation, as I was indicating, that the state, or the government rather, has articulated the standard of review, and they cite to United States v. Baker. And I think it's very important that the court understand that in United States v. Baker, the court who denied the motion for new trial in that case had an opportunity that Judge Edelman, unfortunately, would not seize for himself before he ruled on my motion for a new trial. And that is, in Baker, the government had supplied the district court with the reports about which there might have been some concerns about whether or not they should be disclosed to the defense. And they did that prior to trial. And so the judge was able to make a ruling after considering the reports that were disclosed to the defense and then also looking at the reports that the government had some question about whether or not they should be disclosed to the defense. And in this case, to this day, as I stand here before you now, Judge Edelman has not had an opportunity to look at the complained of reports, and I have not had an opportunity, obviously, to look at the complained of non-disclosed reports. Some reports have been disclosed in this case that lead me to believe that there is important impeachment evidence out there. There is nothing to suggest that the conclusory statements made within the government's brief about Mr. Lopez never having been under consideration or never being a suspect or never being involved in the Sotelo homicide is actually based on fact. They're conclusory statements made out of thin air, and I think that it's extremely important that difference between Baker and this case be seen. And similarly, that the court undertake perhaps the opportunity that was afforded in the Demas case cited by the government in their argument indicating that this sort of impeachment evidence would not be admissible at Salem's trial. They cite Demas where, in fact, the Demas case was a case in which the defendant was complaining that newly discovered evidence of the law enforcement DEA agents, allegations that DEA agent had lied in reports previous to his investigation of the defendant in the Demas case, should have been disclosed. And here the Seventh Circuit back in 1993 remanded the case back to the district court because they found that there was an insufficient record for review to determine whether or not the complained of allegations were such that they should have been disclosed. And that is an opportunity that this court could definitely seize at this point. If you did not feel that the record was sufficient, I don't know how you could feel that the record is sufficient, to tell you the truth, without having somebody take a look at those records, the records that I'm requesting. That is, the statements, particularly of Lopez and Martinez, regarding their involvement in the Sotelo homicide. Judge Adelman has not had an opportunity to look at those records. I have not had an opportunity, and I don't know how anybody can make a ruling that they're not relevant or that they're not admissible. It would be suggested by the plea agreement and the language included in the plea agreement of Benny Martinez, a fellow Latin king, that the type of statements that are attributed to Lopez by the government in that Martinez plea agreement are exactly the kind of bias information that would be wholly admissible in this case. They pertain to a testifying witness and the only witness that supplies the allegations that Salem made threats, the basis of count two, the first count for which he'd been convicted, and the only person that claims that he had a gun, which is the basis of count three, the second count of conviction.
Does the plea agreement make any reference to admissions by Lopez?
It does, Your Honor. And that is the only articulation of statements attributed to Lopez that I've been able to get my mitts on. While the government has turned over some reports related to the Sotelo homicide, they have not turned over a single scrap of paper that outlines how it is that they came to discover that Lopez was involved in that homicide or if, as they contend, was present at that homicide. The plea agreement of Benny Martinez, which is quoted in my reply to the government's response to my motion for new trial, which is in the appendix, I believe it's appendix page 6, does articulate the exact language set forth in the Benny Martinez plea agreement, and which attributes statements to Lopez, admitting his involvement in the homicide. Thank you.
Jacobs. Ms. Hoffman, I'm sorry.
May it please the Court, Your Honor. I'd like to first take up the issue of the disputed police reports. While I was not the attorney who handled this before the lower court, I would note that on page 4 of the government's brief, there is an indication that the police reports were provided under seal to Judge Adelman and also to defense. So there were reports that Judge Adelman reviewed before he denied the motion on August.
All the police reports?
Pardon?
All of the reports or just some?
I'm not familiar with the homicide, but certainly some reports were turned over. I think that at the point that Judge Adelman was reviewing those and defense counsel received them.
That seems to be the concern here is, of course, the government says, well, we didn't have anything against Lopez. We weren't going to do anything about his. But he was riding around with this other fellow, apparently looking for the victim of the murder. Then the other fellow pulled out a gun and shot the victim. And they both took off together. Now, it seems a little stretch of credulity that nobody ever thought that the other fella had something to do with the homicide.
Well, Lopez was not identified by anyone. He was not a suspect in that homicide.
Well, that's what you say, but we don't know what the facts are.
Well, there are reports that were provided to counsel and to Judge Adelman under seal, and you know, certainly as those reports are being reviewed by counsel and by Judge Adelman, if additional reports were needed, that would be the point for either the court or counsel to make a request asking for additional reports for review. But putting the reports aside for the moment, I mean, this material was not admissible at trial. Number one, it wasn't material. I mean, there's
material, you're talking about the reports that were filed under seal?
No, I'm talking about the information of Lopez's presence at the Saleto homicide. That in and of itself was not admissible at the trial for Salem.
What's inadmissible about it?
Well, it would have been used solely for...
Certainly going to be a basis of bias, wouldn't it, if he were...
But no. I mean, first of all, it's not admissible because he was never charged, so it doesn't come in under 609. It doesn't go to his truthfulness or his veracity. It doesn't come in under 608.
Well, the fact
and
that
he denies...
charged, I guess, would establish some bias, wouldn't it?
There's
a basis for charging him.
But
if he didn't charge him, that would suggest that he was getting something for his testimony.
He was not getting anything for that regarding the Saleto homicide at all because he was never going to be charged because he was never identified. The only way that it came to law enforcement attention.
But how do we know what the circumstances were?
Well, certainly the reports that were before Judge Adelman detailed some of the circumstances involving that homicide.
Oh, part of the record on appeal.
It's part of it's docket entry number 84. And so assuming the whole record was transmitted, that would have been transmitted along with it. But in terms of impeachment materials, what the jury did hear about Lopez was that he was a member of the Latin Kings gang, a violent gang. That
he was facing a life sentence.
He was facing.
He pled to.
Right. I mean, the jury heard that. The jury heard that he was facing a life sentence. The jury heard he was cooperating in the RICO case. The jury knew he had possessed weapons, and the jury knew that he had lied previously because he had allowed another Latin King member to accept accountability for a sawed-off rifle or shotgun that he was responsible for possessing. So, I mean, the jury heard substantial evidence of his...
Who brought that out on in his testimony? Was that by cross or by direct?
I believe that some of it was by direct and some of it was by cross. I mean, I think there was... I mean, it did come out in both ways. I mean, it was subject for cross-examination, and it came out some in his direct testimony.
Could you answer that question before I ask?
And the jury was given the caution and great care instruction, wasn't it?
Yes.
About his testimony.
Yes. But he... You know, strike that. I'm sorry. I believe that they were, but I don't know I'm not 100% certain, so I would have to check the record for that. So I don't want to mislead the court on that point. But the jury heard all of that evidence. There was other evidence corroborating Lopez. There was Lopez's mother. There was the other individual who was with Lopez at the time. So, and Judge Adelman, who sat through the trial, viewed this as a strong case against Salem. So given the fact that there were, you know, many opportunities to impeach the defendant as to his truthfulness on these other issues, that Lopez said he wasn't getting anything for the disclosure of his presence at that other homicide, and it would be pure speculation to suggest he was getting something when it's clear in the record that he adamantly said he was not getting anything for providing that information, that the court would be speculating to suggest.
Because we don't have the reports, isn't that?
Well, the court has some of the reports at docket entry number 84. This court will have what Judge Adelman had and what the defense had, but I do believe if either the court or defense believe there are additional reports out there that would have been helpful to an adjudication of the issue or to the defendant cause, there could have been a request to search the files for any additional reports. given that the government believes that this material would not have been admissible anyway, putting aside the jurisdictional issues, the government asks that this court affirm the lower court's denial of the defendant's motion for a new trial.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffman, and thank you for your extraordinary efforts making it here today.
My pleasure. I apologize for any delay.
No problem at all. You were here right on time.
Thank you.
Ms. Quinn.
Thank you. Just briefly, and I can appreciate that Ms. Hoffman's in a tough position here, having taken over the case. She, I don't believe, was the one that worked on the brief, and she wasn't the one in the courtroom, so she may be a little bit unfamiliar with some of the questions that the court posed to her. Specifically, after the government replied to my motion for a new trial, after their response, I put in a reply in which I articulated there are more reports out there, I need them. And Judge Adelman, in his decision at Document 100, denied my request for additional reports. There are no reports that talk about what it is that made the government know that Lopez was involved to some extent on this homicide. There's no reports to indicate when he was to have made this voluntary statement that is conclusorily described by the government in their response and in their brief. I did in August note that the documents 84, which I provided to the district court, which were clearly incomplete reports pertaining to the Sotelo homicide, I asked that the record be supplemented to include those documents. And at just after docket entry 98 on August 1st, that margin order granted the supplementation of the record. The nature of the known impeachment evidence related to drug activity and gun activity was completely different from the pass that Lopez was apparently receiving from law enforcement or from the prosecutor who was at trial. It's different that a person is facing charges versus not being charged with charges, especially a charge as horrific as homicide. He had not yet pled at the time of Salem's trial. Lopez had not yet entered a plea. I don't know if he's entered a plea yet. So those charges with which I was able to confront him at trial in terms of exposing his exposure, he had not pled to, and there had been no resolution and certainly no acceptance of responsibility. So I hope that addresses a few of the court's concerns.
Thank you, Ms. Quinn. And again, the court expresses thanks for your taking this case on appeal and the fine representation of your client. Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.